going to be a busy, busy second hour. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. This program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. And the reason for that is, coming up momentarily, Bob Myers will be joining us. And then after that, I've got Brian Kelly, the head football coach, I should say, at Notre Dame. Then after that, the beef jerky segment.
Is this the beef jerky segment?
Not yet, but soon. And then after that, open phones, 1-800-636-8686. I would reset you ordinarily, but we have got a lot to get done this hour, so let me jump right into it. We are joined right now, as promised, by the president of basketball operations and the GM of the Golden State Warriors. He is a two-time NBA Executive of the Year. He has led Golden State to three NBA championships, five straight conference titles. What a great run that was. Helped build a team that produced the best six-year run, in fact, in the history of the NBA record-wise. He is an inductee into the Monta Vista High School Athletic Hall of Fame. He is, as you know, a San Quentin basketball legend. He is Bob Myers. Bob, it has been a minute or two since we have spoken. Bob, how are you doing? How's life?
Oh, man. We haven't talked in a little while. How are you doing? I'm fine. I'm just, you know, this is a different deal, Jim. This whole deal. Life, work, maybe, I don't know. I guess everybody's got a different degree of difficulty. I'm not comparing to the people that are actually have struggled with this physically or working on the front lines of it. I don't know what that's like. I imagine that's got to be extremely difficult. But in sports, if we're talking about sports, it just adds a huge layer to what already is probably all-encompassing job. And so, you know, we all do our best with it, but there's no blueprint for this. There's no handbook, and you just try to move through it the best way you can.
I think that's well said. There is no playbook for something like this, and you're right, Bob. It is a very different deal, a very different deal for everybody. You know, I'm going to jump into it and ask you some basketball questions. Like, it's been so much of a roller coaster, Bob, going back to the 2019 finals. Injuries to Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant, then the departure of Kevin Durant, the challenges of last season, and then on the day of this year's draft, of course, comes word that Klay Thompson had suffered the injury in Southern California. What was your reaction when you first heard that news?
I don't even know what to say about it. I mean, that was just the timing, the actual what happened. I don't even know, Jim. I mean, I'm still reeling with that one because the draft, for people that are listening, it can take over your whole month. It takes over your mind. It takes over your energy because you just want to try to get it right. And we had the number two pick, and we had some second-round picks, and there's all these thoughts whirling in your head and all these variables that you're trying to deal with. But on top of that, you don't really expect to be dealing with one of your best players getting hurt on that day, on that afternoon, 3 hours preceding the draft. And so, it, you know, as people, we probably can deal with more than we think we can, but it doesn't mean you should have to. And so with this news, there was a surrealness to it, and it was kind of like, there's not great words, but the best ones I can convey are, you have these thoughts like, are you effing kidding me? I mean,
right?
Are you kidding me? And there's so many layers to how you process it. There's first the empathy for Klay, right? That's the first thing you do. And you go, this guy loves the game, is well-respected, obviously hugely important to our organization. I know him personally. So just kind of trying to go to where his mind is. And then organizationally going, what does this mean? And you got about 2 hours. Does this mean something we should do differently? Does this mean we should revisit everything? Luckily, I was with our owner, Joe Lacob, and Kerr was right next to me, and I got the first call and walked out of the room, and Joe saw the look on my face, and he said, what, because the guy, Clay's agent texted me and said, ASAP, call me. And I was in the middle of talking to my owner who was sitting to my left, and I said, I gotta take this. And he looked at me, and it was one of those calls where, you know, you're a human being. We've all had these calls where, like, something's bad. This is not good. And so he looked at me and I said something, I go, this is not, I don't know what it is, but and then I came back and I gave him the things you don't want to hear in sports are ACL and Achilles. You don't want to hear those words. And I walked back in the room, I said, I think it might be Achilles, I got to go. And then I called Kerr and him, we went into my office and, you know, we didn't know, but we I think we kind of knew it was a classic. When Kobe got hurt with his Achilles, I always remember when you hurt your Achilles, I was at that game, the Laker game where he hurt his, and Harrison Barnes was guarding him. And I said, Harrison, what did he say? And he goes, he grabbed me right after he tore his Achilles and said, did you kick me in the back of the leg? And this is how smart Kobe is. Like, this is how fast thinking he is or was, unfortunately. He knew right away, if Harrison didn't kick me in the back of the leg, I just tore my Achilles. So when a player tears their Achilles, if you're around the game, it feels like, and the people that are listening, maybe you have, it feels like it kicked in the back of the shin. Like, and nobody obviously did. That's what it feels like, though, because that's your Achilles tearing. And so when we talk to Clay, Clay says, it felt like I got kicked in the back of the leg. And that's kind of like, that's the one thing you don't want to hear. And so we were in the office and we kind of knew, we did the MRI the next day, but when you hear that, you kind of know. And then we called staff and, you know, everybody asked, what did you say to staff? I said, what are you going to say? You think Clay tore his Achilles? And he just, what do you say after that? There's nothing to say. I mean, so he was speechless. I didn't have any words of comfort. I mean, I mean, everybody's kind of processing it individually. And I don't know, Jim. Look, I don't want to compare it. Again, this is sports. He'll be okay. I'll be okay. We'll be okay. But for us, professionally, this one hurt. But if you want me to qualify it and say compared to what most people are dealing with, yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the world. But in sports, those are the ones you don't want to hear and you don't want to deal with. The health stuff is always the hardest to navigate.
Bob Myers, my guest. Bob, this is why I appreciate you so much, and I appreciate that response very, very much, and you're right. I would imagine the response was, are you effing kidding me? After everything he'd already been through and gotten that close to coming back and was right there on the precipice. I mean, there's just some things that are inexplicable, to be certain. Bob Myers is my guest. Bob, you mentioned your owner, Joe Lacob, and the thing is, his response was really interesting because you immediately go out there and you trade for Kelly Oubre Jr., which is significant for a number of reasons, and I bring that up because not only what he brings to the team, but that it's a massive statement in the sense that there's a massive hike in the payroll tax. A lot of owners might refuse to do that. What's that say about Joe that he's willing to do that after the injury to Clay and after already winning three championships?
Yeah, Jim, that's a really good question. And what I'm about to say for the people listening, I'm not giving you the company line here. That's all I can preface this with. I did say, like, hey, man, it's going to be tough now without Clay. You know, it's just take any team in the NBA, it's a different sport. You take away one of your top two players, top three, you know, it makes it very, very hard to win a championship. Any team. You can name any team in the league, and I'll tell you, if they lost, you know, one of the top two, three guys, like you're just being realistic. It sucks to say, but it's just life. So he easily could have said, you know what, I'm not spending an extra tens of millions of dollars here. And I couldn't have blamed him for that. But I said this when we introduced Wiseman and Nico Mannion, our draft picks. This guy wants to win more than I could even really comprehend sometimes. Because I'll tell you what, most GMs would want that okay from their owner and just rush into it. And then I even asked, I said, are you sure? And this guy, any GM in any sport, and there's, you know, if you look at the four major sports in the U.S., there's 120 of us roughly. I'll tell you what I've been blessed with. My owner wants to win. And we've done, when we have fans, we do fine, profitable. When we don't, we lose money. And a lot of people are losing money right now. Again, to qualify, we're a professional sports team. But this would be a very fair time, or would have been, for our owner to say, yeah, you know what, let's not pour more money into this. And he never, not for one second, Jim, did he say, I don't even think he had that thought. I did. You know, you might have, if you owned our team, and I said, Jim, you'd say, you know what, Bob, I want to be competitive, but maybe this isn't the time. I mean, this guy, he went all in. And I'm lucky, and our fans, for that matter. If anybody listens to Warriors fan, like, this is the type of owner. I'll tell you what, people are listening, I'm going to guess, are probably sports fans. And you probably have some favorite team. This is the kind of owner you want. I promise you, Jim, you've been doing this longer than I have. No fans care about how much money their team is making or losing. And by the way, they shouldn't. What do they care? So, in essence, that means you want to have an owner or you want to, one thing I learned about sports is the people that are fans out there of any team, you better hope you have good ownership. Because if you don't have good ownership, it's going to make it hard for your team to win consistently. So I'm lucky to have a guy like Joe and Peter Gruber and the whole ownership group to support what we do.
Not only, Bob, do I accept what you just said, I would take this one step further. I would say, pandemic aside, I would even argue that not every owner of every professional franchise wants to win or wants to win that badly, because oftentimes winning is very expensive and they're more than happy doing just what they have to do to keep the fans coming and do business and make a profit and then affect the bottom line. I don't even think that every owner, as crazy as that sound, actually wants to win or pay the price that it costs.
And I think, you know, look, let's say you, Jim, you're a multi-billionaire, or any fan. And a lot of these guys, you're right. I mean, here's what happens. You make 10, 15, whatever billion dollars, and you go, what am I going to do now in life? You know what? What's the most hardest thing to do is buy a professional sports team. Like, that's a club. There's a lot of billionaires, and I'm not diminishing what it takes to be a billionaire. I have no idea. I'm not a billionaire. I never will be. But there's a lot of them out there in our country, or in the world, for that matter. But a lot of these guys or women, anybody, what they want to be is in this exclusive. I want to own a professional team. Now, that there's only 120 of those in the country, and then it becomes your right. So sometimes it's not, I'm going to pour my heart and soul into this endeavor of winning. It's just, you know what, this is a good investment. Might as well. But I'm not telling fans, you can be a fan wherever you want to be. But the ownership piece, I don't want to make this about a business, but if you look at teams that are highly successful, that they consistently win, it's a lot to do with ownership. Because it starts with ownership. I got hired because of our owner. Our owner hires, they make these decisions. They hire a GM, they fire a GM, they hire a coach, they fire a coach. Especially now, Jim, used to be a team could be bought for $25 million however many years ago. These teams now, billions of dollars, do you think owners are just going to say, I spent $3 billion or $2 billion or $1 billion on this team. I'm just going to let some guy run it. Just like if you bought a team, you'd be like, I spent whatever, $2 billion to buy the Chargers. And you're like, I want to know who we're drafting it at the fifth pick in the draft. That's what's fun about owning a team. So that's why I'm really lucky. My guy loves it. He was the season ticket holder before he bought the team. He watches games. He texted me last night watching the Kansas-Kentucky game. I mean, this guy loves it. And so I'm lucky. Some people would say that's too intrusive. I love it. My owner's all in on and all in on the game and the sport and wants to win.
Bob Myers joining us. You know, Bob, it's a really, really bad analogy, but one of the reasons that we got into horse racing, and I never thought that I would. I mean, I love the animals. I absolutely love the animals, but it's what you're talking about. Like, I want to be a part of the process. Like, I would never, ever tell the trainer what to do because that's their business and I don't know, but I just like the process. I like being a part of it. You know, where are we going to run? When are we going to run? What are our chances? Who are we running against? It's like on a much, much smaller level. We feel like not that we own a franchise, but we're a part of the process. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And I could ask you any number of things. It's always an amazing conversation, Bob, and I appreciate it. I want to ask you about Andrew Bogut before you go, because he announced his retirement yesterday. And this guy, man, he is a one-of-a-kind character. He was one of the first moves that was made when you were an assistant GM. What do you remember about that? And then what did he mean to the organization?
Yeah, Bogut's he meant a heck of a lot. It was one of the biggest things we did initially to kind of help pivot the team. And we got a former number one pick, well-established, and a defensive player. But Andrew, personally, he's one of the most highly intelligent people you're going to meet. Andrew is funny, and I say this in a kind way. With Andrew, you're guilty until proven innocent. Andrew doesn't suffer fools. So he will call you out directly. He wants the truth, good, bad, or ugly. He saw through a lot of the NBA that wasn't real. I mean, there's a lot of it. It's like an entertainment gym, and there's a lot of it that's stuff that's fluff. And he wanted the authentic side of sports. He loved playing, loved the competition, but he could leave a lot of the other stuff behind. Very kind of cutting sense of humor. But for us, Jim, he helped us win a championship, and we hadn't won one in 40 years. So, I mean, that's why I texted him the other day. I said, anything you need, congratulations on a great career. You'll always have a home with us and anything. And I hope he comes and visits. I don't know if he's going to stay in Australia or come back to the Bay or what he'll do. But fascinating guy. Love the fact that he's got an international perspective. Love talking about Australian, their culture. He's got a great – all the international people, I'm sure you know some. I love hearing about views of our country from people that live outside our country. I think it's fascinating. So many things about Andrew that on the court I'll miss, but his personality and his character are highly unique. And he helped, like I said, professionally, he was awesome for us. I mean, he gave us something we never had in the center position and helped us win a championship.
He is the president of basketball ops and the GM of the Golden State Warriors and has led them to 3 NBA championships, 5 straight conference titles. He is a San Quentin basketball legend, a very, very good friend of the program. Bob, I appreciate your thoughts. It had been a minute or two. It's so good to get caught up. I know it's been a really challenging time and a really difficult time, but it's always great to talk to you, Bob. Thanks so much for that.
Thanks, Jim. One day we'll get – not the time to go back into San Quentin and play hoops right now, but hopefully – I look forward to getting back in there when we can.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that too, Bob. Thanks so much. I was communicating with Ray Ritter last night, and I said, man, I will never, ever, ever not take you up on an opportunity ever again. Man, what a year it's been. All right, Bob, thank you so much.
All right.
And thanks to the legend that is Raymond Ritter. Raymond Ritter is just quite simply not only one of the all-time great executives in the history of professional sports, but he has redefined the publicity position. I mean, Ray is so much more than that. Ray is an icon and a legend, but Ray and Bob both are constantly saying, when are you coming to San Quentin? Because Bob has had those legendary runs with some of his players at San Quentin, and I've never taken him up on that opportunity. All right, when we come back, the interview train, which is legendary today, continues. Brian Kelly, the head football coach at Notre Dame, joins me next segment. After that, and you probably should have been thinking about it already, what is your beef? Hit me with a beef relating to sports, not sports, anything at all, on the phones, on social. Hit me with your beef. We only do it once a week, and we will do that at 10:40 Pacific.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. All right, we are rolling through hour number 2 on this Wednesday. I am Jim Rome. As promised, we are joined right now by the head football coach at Notre Dame. He is a 3-time Home Depot Coach of the Year award winner. He is the only coach to win it more than once. He has led Notre Dame to 10 wins or more in 4 of the last 5 seasons. Notre Dame beat number 19 North Carolina 31-17 on Friday. Notre Dame is 9-0. They're number 2 in the college football playoff rankings. They have clinched a spot in the ACC championship game, and they are hosting Syracuse Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. We are joined by the head coach there, Brian Kelly. Brian, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you, Brian. So you're coming off that win in Chapel Hill where you were without 2 starting offensive linemen for the entire game. Also star safety Kyle Hamilton for the second half. There are some specific moments from that game that I want to talk to you about. But overall, what did your team show you by the way they handled that challenge on the road against a very good Mac Brown coach team?
Yeah, really talented offensive football team and a team that hadn't lost at home. So, we knew going on the road it was going to be a challenge. But, I think, it's a football team that we have that believes they're going to win and has that grit. You know, when things don't go their way, they just dig down deeper and find ways to come together. And so, you have a special team when, those dynamics kind of take place on their own. There's no coaching. There's no yelling. There's no screaming. It's a football team that won't lose, and it can't lose because of that. They just have a strong group of players here.
Notre Dame head football coach Brian Kelly joining us. In terms of that grit that you mentioned, happened. North Carolina scored touchdowns on their first two possessions. In fact, the score was tied 14-14 at the end of the first quarter. It looked like it might be a track meet, but then you held them to 3 points the rest of the way. That was the lowest point total since Mack Brown returned to North Carolina. So what did you make of how your defense played over the final three quarters?
Well, I mean, obviously, things did change. I think first and foremost, we started to get some pressure on Sam. And, you know, any time that you can make a quarterback of his caliber uncomfortable and not in rhythm, and that really was the difference. We got him out of rhythm. First down was outstanding for us. We got him into second and third and long. And then, you know, we're about 25% keeping teams to about 25% success ratio on third down. So we've been outstanding on third down. But it started with first and second down, getting him into long yardages and getting Sam uncomfortable with some of the pressures that we had. And that was really the difference going into especially the second, third, and fourth quarter.
Now, Brian, when you talk about Sam, you're talking about Tar Heels quarterback Sam Howell. In fact, he said after the game that your defensive front, quote, probably played more physical and harder than anybody since I've been here, end quote. And the fact is, it's been a reoccurring theme throughout the season that there's an elite toughness and an intensity to your team. How did you go about developing and approaching that mindset?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. It's developing that mindset. I think, you know, our guys have a great process in terms of how they prepare, but you know, preparation is one thing, and then competition is another. And I think that over the last couple of years, we've really learned how to flip the switch from practice preparation to a competition mindset. And this team has an identity now where when they go out, they want to dominate their opponent. And that takes time to develop that. You have to play free and fast. And in some instances, you can't be worrying about what the score is. You got to be thinking about how you play. And I think our team has developed that identity.
That's really interesting. Brian Kelly is joining us. You know, I talked to Ian Book on this show after the BC game, and I've got to say I could not have been more impressed by him. You have made the point numerous times that he's just a winner. How would you define being a winner? For instance, is it something you can coach into a player, or is that something that player is born with and hardwired for?
Well, I think first and foremost, it starts with, you know, who he is as a person, how he was brought up, the character of the young man, his parents and his family. He comes to Notre Dame and, you know, he goes through some tough times where, you know, the scrutiny of this position that he holds, the quarterback position, you know, you have to obviously have a short memory. And, you know, he is a guy that I think a lot of people picked him apart as the quarterback, but yet he continued to find ways to win. And now that I think, you know, he's at this point where that stuff does not bother him, he just goes out and competes and plays. And because of that, similar to what I was talking to you earlier about in terms of how we play, he's developed this identity where that doesn't bother him anymore. He just goes and plays fast and free, doesn't listen to the noise. And that's character development. And he's just a wonderful kid, and he loves playing for Notre Dame. He loves playing the game, and you can see it just the way he plays. Saturday or Friday, I guess it was when we played. I'm losing track of the days. But, you know, some of the plays that he made, you can see that he's not playing tight. He's not playing afraid to make plays. He's out there enjoying what he's doing.
Yeah, Brian, I think we're thinking about the same exact play. I mean, I know you're mentioning a number of plays, but when we're talking about plays or a play or winners making winning plays, what was going through your mind when he had that flip pass to Michael Mayer on the run across his body from inside his own 20 on third down in a one-score game in the fourth quarter?
You know, I was fine with it. I mean, he looks both ways before he crosses the street here on campus. I mean, you know, he's not a guy that's going to do something that's, you know, putting his team in jeopardy. So if he feels comfortable doing those kinds of things, I'm all for it because he's not going to put our team in jeopardy like that. So if Ian Butch's making those kinds of plays, we're in for a nice run here the next few weeks.
We're talking to Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly. You know, Brian, you mentioned also that he kind of figured out what it's like to play quarterback at that school. That's not an easy thing to do, but he figured out that you just got to block out the noise. I would make the argument that you've done the same thing as head coach. As an example, that win over North Carolina was your 101st career win there, second only to Newt Rockne. Like, if we were to go back to what you did after the 2016 season, you're now on the verge of double-digit wins every season since then. I understand that you're not going to rest on your laurels, but do you feel like maybe you've pretty much cracked the code in terms of what it takes to have sustained excellence at Notre Dame?
I think, you know, we've got a very good understanding of what we need to do on a day-to-day basis, the support staff, the coaching staff, what we need to do on a day-to-day basis in developing our players. I think we've got a really good business plan in place for what works at Notre Dame, and that's the most important thing. What works at Notre Dame may not work at another school. It might not work at USC or it might not work at Oklahoma, but it works here at Notre Dame, and so we're going to continue to do that.
So what is that exactly? Like, what works there? How would you describe what it takes to have that level of success at Notre Dame? What is the process?
First of all, focus in on recruiting the players to Notre Dame that fit Notre Dame. Don't get caught up in looking at, you know, the star rankings. There's a certain young man that you can develop here at Notre Dame that can play at the highest level. And so they've got to be a fit for your business or organization. I mean, listen, all the Fortune 500 companies would tell you the same thing. They're going to hire somebody that fits their culture first, and then they'll develop them on the way. And that's the same thing here at Notre Dame. We're going to recruit somebody that fits here at Notre Dame and develop them along the way. And that's really the core of what we're talking about.
Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly joins me for another moment. So as I mentioned, Brian, in the introduction, you have clinched a spot in the ACC championship game. How does it feel to know that Notre Dame is going to a conference championship game in its first and only season in a conference?
Well, it was, you know, something that we've never done before, but we're clearly grateful for the opportunity that we were given by the ACC, and so it became a goal. It's the first time we've had it as a goal, and so now we're in. Now we need to do something with this opportunity, and that is, you know, win the ACC championship. So guys are excited about the opportunity. We've got a game against Syracuse that we want to obviously finish off for our seniors, and, you know, Ian Book's got a chance to be the all-time leading quarterback in terms of wins with a win this weekend. So there's a lot at stake this weekend, but again, I think it gives us this opportunity now that we've never had before that the kids are excited about.
And then finally, that is the final game of the regular season. I understand that that's exactly where your focus is. Let me finally ask you this. With the success that you've had, Brian, your name's going to come up for NFL jobs. I'm just kind of curious how you handle that. I mean, do you owe it to yourself to at least answer the phone, or is that just not on your radar and not of any interest?
It's really not of any interest to me. I think that, you know, maybe a few years back it might have been, but no longer. I mean, I've got a plan that we've got in place here where I feel like this is where my career has pointed me towards, and enjoying every moment of it being here. So we're going to continue to build it here at Notre Dame.
He is the head football coach at Notre Dame. Notre Dame has clinched a spot in the ACC championship game, and they are hosting Syracuse on Saturday. Brian, I really appreciate the visit once again. So good to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim. Take care.
You too. Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly, and they are undefeated, and he is a three-time Home Depot Coach of the Year Award winner. All right, short timeout. Good to talk some Notre Dame football with the head coach. When we come back, phone lines are open, 1-800-636-8686, but it is the bottom of the hour, so let me get you a sports update. Here you go. Here is Rich Ackerman.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
As I said, a really tremendous interview day. My thanks to Brian Kelly, Notre Dame. All right, really quickly, before I get to your beefs, Bruce Feldman tweets, quote, sources, Michigan has had to cancel its game with Maryland this weekend due to COVID issues with the Wolverines program. Ohio State is not happy to see that. All right, so I've got a full take on that coming up later on in the program. So Michigan canceling its game with Maryland. Ohio State desperately trying to get to six games. They need that Michigan game. Well, they need the Michigan State game first. So that's coming up in a moment or next hour. Meantime, it is time for the beef jerky segment. Old Trapper sponsors that. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, to my left, you see a giant tower of beef. Old Trapper beef jerky. It's better for you. It's higher in essential protein than chips, sugar-filled bars, or candy. Ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Listen, really quickly, as always, your beefs on social are awesome. Props for that. Phone beef is not quite as good, generally. So hit me up on the phones, 1-800-636-8686. Phone lines are open right now. Hit me with a beef. Quickly, let me start with social. Romy, my beef is with every single receiver in the NFL. If they don't make the catch, the first thing they do is make a flag-throwing motion with their hands, and they look around for a call. Mike in Snowbird. Good point. Good beef. Rome, here's my beef. NBA stiffing the Ravens, Steelers, and general NFL fans so that octogenarian grannies can watch the Rockettes, Earth, Wind, and Fire, and Dolly Parton plug in a strand of Christmas lights. Vince in Illinois. Jim, my beef is with the creditors who call me on Christmas Day while the family is opening gifts regarding the credit cards that I used to buy said gifts. You parasites will get your money when I'm damn good and ready. Can you please give us one day off? One day of peace, at least until the newness of the gifts have worn off. Thanks, Jim in Temecula. Dude, do you really get that phone call on Christmas Day? Hey, man, I'm not saying that's an easy gig, being the one who's got to call for cash, the creditor. But, man, if you're calling people on Christmas Day, that is cold-blooded. Then again, bro, maybe you don't finance Christmas gifts that you can't afford. I don't know. Hey, Rome, here's my beef. It just happened this morning. It's with Wake and Bake guy in the Starbucks line. This smells like he just harvested a field of weed. And keep in mind that we both have masks on. Come on, dude. I guess you have to fix your head before your day starts, but do us all a favor and spray some Axe. Chew some freaking gum, you burn out. Aaron in Iowa, bravo. Jim, I got a beef with my neighbor across the street who has a motion-controlled spotlight pointed directly at my house. Every time somebody walks down the sidewalk at night, my baggy neighbor's spotlight lights up my front room like a police helicopter searching for a burglar. Put that thing at the ground before I do it for you. Good job, Brent. Brent in PC, this is not a competition or a contest, but that's my favorite one so far. Hey, Jim, my beef is with tire pressure warning lights. Is my tire actually only 2 pounds low, or is it getting ready to separate itself from rim and thrust me into oncoming traffic? Signed, Howie, a.k.a. 45 Got Fat. That's good, too. Those things are temperamental, aren't they? Like, I want to gauge. I don't trust those sensors. I want to gauge like a gas gauge. Dear Van Smack, I've got beef with people from New York City saying that they're getting, quote, online when standing in a row with other people. Hey, New Yorkers, getting online is when you open Google Chrome. War of the Buffalo Bills being New York State's one and only NFL team. Brady, Rochester. Dear Jim, my beef is with everyone telling me to stay safe this year. I'm trying, mate, but having safe sex ain't that easy when there's a 6-month production delay on hot air balloons. Signed, Greg. And he's got the hammer emoji. You see what Brett and Bugahaw did there? I do. He's suggesting that Greg needs a hot air balloon is a rubber. You see what he did there? James Rome III. What's my beef? My beef is when I hit Mastro's Ocean Club, order Wagyu, but I get served USDA Prime. Signed, Beauregard in Pacific Palisades. Would you take a bow, Bo? Take a bow, Bo. First of all, I bet that didn't happen. Secondly, take a bow, Bo. That is good. Hey, man, I don't want your USDA Prime. I ordered the Wagyu. You know who the hell I am? I'm Beauregard. You know who? Where the hell I live? The Palisades.
You know who the hell I am?
Hey, boss man, I got a beef with you saying that I don't have my own jungle song. Regards, Ike's back was aching.
Rick's back is aching, oh. Arthritic fingers, oh.
It's lit!
He was drooling out his mouth. Ike's back is aching, oh.
Arthritic fingers. I'm not laughing because that's funny. I don't even know why I'm laughing, because it's not funny. Over the top TP tweets, my beef is with the idiots that waste an entire roll of valuable airport bathroom TP to cover the toilet seat. Look up, you kook. There is specifically designed wax paper in the shape of a damn toilet seat right in front of you. Brian underscore Dino, quote, you know what my beef is? It's the same as every other clone's. That garbage song, garbage. Bernie, unleashed upon us yesterday. Still so angry.
Rick V. Adam Hawk, Rick V. Adam Hawk, what's the money line?
Mike and LFK tweets. Adam Hawk. My beef is with Bernard, a.k.a. Burndog, and that nightmare I had last night while asleep. I was in an interrogation room, blindfolded and being tortured with that trash song he submitted to the jungle. I'd rather be waterboarded with gasoline. Hi, Jim. You want to know what my beef is? My beef is with people applauding when the plane lands. What the hell would you expect? You've got a 1 in 11 million chance of a crash. Do you applaud when your Uber drops you off at your destination? Stop. Bella B in Calgary. Patrick tweets, my beef is having to update Adobe Flash Player every time I open up my lapper. I like that. That's good. 12 Wood, my only beef is that I can't get that stupid Rit V Hawk song out of my head.
Rit V Adam Hawk, Rit V Adam
at
Hawk.
At Mock Moda tweets, my beef is Adam Hawk beef V Adam Hawk Rit V Adam Hawk Rit V Adam Hawk. Thanks, Mock Moda. Let's go to the phones. Rapid fire phone beef. Let's go to Northern California. Ryan. Ryan, what's your beef?
Hey, Rome. I got a beef with people that don't admit to liking Hawaiian and ham pizza, as it's some sort of pizza heresy. Yet when all the pizza shows up, the first pie to go is the ham and pineapple.
I like that, Ryan. I'm with you.
I'm out.
That is heresy. I don't order it anymore, but when I was younger and in my college days, I'd hit that. The Canadian bacon, pineapple, pizza, that was good. I'm with you. Heresy. Let's go to Colorado Springs. It's the beef segment. Chris, good to have you. What's your beef?
Hey, Jim, my beef as a stay-at-home uncle is with radio commercials that are four times louder than the show I'm listening to. Never fails. I almost have my niece to sleep, and then I got you yelling at me about Granger or the delicious, nutritious Old Trapper. Just turn it down. We get it. Thanks, out.
My man, I just want to make sure you're getting the message. They're important messages. I'm not yelling at you about Granger. I'm just making sure you know the benefits. for the ones that get it done. Hey, Chris. Granger, for the ones who get it done. He's a stay-at-home uncle, he said. Let's go this time to Omaha, Nebraska. Kathleen, I know you have beef. What is it?
Who gives a rat's furry ass about a Christmas tree lighting? I cannot tolerate Christmas music. Johannes Ekstrom is the only one who get me to tolerate because he's a fabulous singer. He's the frontman of Avatar, and I have all 8 of their albums except for their 2 EPs.
Okay, got it. You know what? I'll rack you, Kathleen. You're really angry and really loud. And generally, I have no idea what you're talking about. For real?
War Lady Clone.
Let's go to Larry. Parody Larry has a beef, apparently. Lawrence, what is your beef?
Hey, Jim, my beef is with one Bob Griffin III. So RG3 once was the franchisee, then got a busted knee. Now he's the Ravens QB. Let's watch and see. The Steelers don't a D. Gonna light him up like a Christmas tree.
Ah. That's not a good call. No. You don't he like that. Use the What's like Your Beef call. Segment not a very good to do call. A parody. Wow. Parody Larry somehow working his way in. That is your beef segment. Well done. Well done. Got some phone calls in there. Some great beefs once again. And on social, we kept our streak alive. It never fails. It always works. Y'all always have beefs. It always makes me laugh. And if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, look to my left. Look to my right. You see nothing but a fake brick wall. Look to my left, and what do you see? A gigantic tower of beef. Old Trapper. There's Peppered. There's Old Fashioned. Hey, I got some beef sticks in there. Hey, Rick, come and get some. Hot and spicy. I love it. Mm. All right, when we come back, I'm going to reset for you. And I've got an open phone third hour, and I've got topics which include Michigan and the conspiracy theory that they might opt out to avoid getting their asses kicked by Ohio State. Except they're not playing this weekend. Stay tuned.